The Whole Rabbit is brought to you by the generous support of our listeners. This week's show is sponsored by Real Name and Katrina Carrick. If you too would like to hear all our extended episodes, get a big old sticker of our cover art, a shiny holographic Rabbit Clan sticker, and access to our Discord coven, become a $5 subscriber at www.patreon.com. On this week's show, we discuss the value of villainy and listen to apologies for it straight from the devil's lips themselves. We list the internet's favorite baddies, talk about why we love them so much, and explore the similarities and differences that make up the rainbow of evil. So sit back, relax, light up a J,
and it puts the lotion in the basket!
Okay, I can see that.
But Boxman is like Eggman.
I think I thought of like, what I remembered why I think he's so likable though, because Eggman is just... He's kind of similar to Plankton, where he's just casually evil.
He's pathetic, though.
Yeah, but he's always himself.
Yeah. Like, there's no facade, but he's just trying to keep up with it. Like, they're always trying to catch up to being the coolest villain, but they're always overlooking something, which is how they get defeated every fucking time.
I feel like Plankton isn't really a villain for the sake of being a villain, though.
I don't know. I think he's mentally deranged.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying, when I was a kid, the fun song, his version was better.
Yeah.
F is for fire that burns down the whole town. If I do
U
that.
U is for uranium. Bomb.
Bombs.
N is
it
for,
is
no,
for no survivors.
You gotta follow through. You can't just start and then stop and, like, leave me the only one.
Oh, you got it, buddy.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Whole Rabbit, where we do more than just juice the clockwork orange, vivisect the evil doctor, and mend Pinhead's tender wounds. No! We choose an island, fortify it, dung it about with enginery of war, and smite the people that none may stand before us, trampling low men in the fierce lust of our pride in the day of our wrath. Because today, we're talking about the bad guy, and having sympathy for the devil. I'm your host, Luke Madrid, the Hacking Rabbit. I'm joined by Mari Mami-sama.
Awoo!
The dastardly Darth Dingus, the birthday boy.
It got out.
And industrial illusionist.
Hey, hey.
Hey, hey, hey.
The Sagittarian Cynthia.
Is that my Cynthia? Villain name now?
You just have a really weird Discord icon.
Cynthia.
From Rugrats.
We got to change his name now.
Yeah.
It is Cynthia.
Yes. Cynthia is probably the evil demon that's controlling Angelica in the first place.
Holy crap.
Did anyone ever think about Angelica?
I never thought about Cynthia controlling Angelica.
I hated her. I thought she was a bitch, but now I'm sad.
I kind of liked Angelica because I'm a spoiled brat.
Come around me or my family again.
She abuses babies. She hurts babies.
Bad guys. They're cool. Why do we like them?
Why do you like them? I mean, sometimes they're pretty hot, but they're buttholes.
I think a lot of times it's because they're a villain can be like their genuine self 100% of the time. They don't have to hide anything.
All the ways you wish you could be, that's me. I look like you want to look, I fuck like you want to fuck, I'm smart, capable, and most importantly, I'm free in all the ways you are not.
I feel that the villain in a story or the antagonist would provide almost like a looking glass or a gauge of progress to the hero. I feel like the hero and the villain are intimately related, but they're definitely separate entities. And you could argue that they're polar opposite.
I feel that in a way the villain grounds the hero. Oftentimes a villain is simply a more believable character than somebody who's goody-goody all the time.
Yeah.
I feel like if you want to read into it a little bit, I think this is part of why Marvel's take on superhero movies was so successful, because you get the sarcastic, somewhat flawed superhero who makes like mean little quips that are kind of funny now and then.
Yeah, and you could see why someone would hate them.
Fuck that guy. Fucking Spider-Man? Massive dick.
And if you're going to go into the military, which it's a recruitment tool for, you're going to get hazed and you better get used to some ambiguity on your team.
All sorts of ambiguity.
And, you know, it's interesting that you guys even start out saying that, of course, villains can be authentic in who they are because they have no regard for morals or other people's boundaries. But at the same time, a lot of times you have villains must gain the trust of unsuspecting victims. So a lot of villains have an expertly crafted facade that they wear, like a mask. Like, we'll get into Patrick Bateman later, but that clip we just watched where he's doing the facial peel in the bathroom, he's pulling his mask off when he's talking about himself and looking in the mirror. I mean, it's so obvious that he's just saying that I'm a shell, I'm a facade with nothing underneath. That's the thing about some villains, while they're being as authentic as possible, they are also shapeshifters. So that's also something, I mean, I see this often. And also Fox is a trickster character, and in many different lores in Native American and Shintoism, the fox is a shapeshifter as well and will trick you.
Yeah. Oftentimes the bad guy kind of realizes that everybody in the world has this mask on and they're not afraid to take it off and show who they really are to everybody.
Or to change it up to get what they want.
I think really, like, if you are a person who identifies with their misbehavior, you don't have to justify anything.
Yeah, to anyone.
Tony Montana says, you don't have the guts to be what you want to be. You need people like me. You need people like me so you can point your fucking fingers and say, that's the bad guy. So what, that makes you good? You're not good. You know how to hide, how to lie. Me? I don't have that problem. Me, I always tell the truth, even when I lie. So good night to the bad guy. Come on. It's the last time you're going to see a bad guy like this again, let me tell you. He's a little bit like Don Corleone in the sense that he's going to be himself. And he even sees bad guys sort of going south that way, where like he lives by his principles. You know what I mean? Like, whatever they happen to be. Like,
villains only answer to themselves at all times.
Well, there's some bad guys who, and we'll get into this later, because of their alignment, have to listen to their boss.
Or if they make a deal, then they have to fulfill the deal. That's where we get into, like, you have villains that don't have any rules whatsoever that they follow, and there's no pattern to their behavior. And the unpredictability is what makes them villainous, right? But then you also have villains that go by a set of rules, and they have very, very strict ways about which they will engage in their, I guess, craft. I mean, like, either antagonizing the hero or taking victims for themselves for their own pleasure. So, you know, there's kind of two ways to approach that if you are a villain.
We've really touched on multiple types of villains. And honestly, thinking about it now, there are many ways and many reasons that a person can be evil. But I can't think of one compelling villain that I've seen that lacks drive and ambition.
Yeah.
They have, you know, as old Scarface put it, they have the guts to be who they want to be. They get what they want.
Christian in Midsommar becomes a villain because he's unwilling. He won't meet his drives. That's one very rare example.
I've not seen that movie.
Just to play devil's advocate.
But I mean, I don't know. I haven't seen it. But could you argue that because his drives haven't been met, that he is pushed on by desperation? Like, he's still a victim in some respect,
which it gets into this gray area. Like, even if someone's like mentally deranged and they're sick in the head and they do something bad, are they really villainous? Because it's not like they are planning to do that. They just happen to do it because they're sick.
I guess it just depends on what the consequences of their actions would be.
That's a complicated conversation about if being evil means you're sick and if you can even rehabilitate people. But before we have that conversation, I want to keep with this, why do we like bad guys? I think we like bad guys that reflect our shadow, personally. The whole hack rabbit thing, I think, is pretty well reflected by Jack Torrance. I think the American Psycho matches with that archetype a bit. And so I'm attracted to bad guys that reflect my own shortcomings. I don't know if that's true for everyone. Do you have a favorite villain or a certain type of villain you like best?
Yeah, like my first villain that I really attached to is Maleficent from Sleeping Beauty. Because when I was little, and you know, you get all the Disney movies or whatever, and every girl has the little princess that they want to pretend to be. My favorite role model was the Evil Queen, because there were no other powerful female figures in the movies for me to relate to. So I was like, well, you know what? She's a cool dragon and stuff, and I really like her. But she's portrayed as the mistress of evil, and she's basically a stereotype of an angry old woman that's jealous
Now that I have to think about it, I think the villains that I most often identify with are the ruthless kind, you know?
Well, I wasn't
it's
done.
Not that I myself am, but what did you say, Mari?
I wasn't done, though.
Oh, shit.
The ruthless ones are the ones that I really don't like. Like, if they have no flaws or redeeming qualities at all, or they don't show any, like kindness or any kind of empathy toward anything else, I don't like them. But with Maleficent, the reason that she cursed the Princess Aurora is because she was not invited to a party, which is very Eris-like.
The original snub.
Yeah, and that's why Eris struck me so deeply, because there were no good, strong female role models, you know, when I was younger. So I kind of attached to this, and it was ascribed the role of villain in most of media. So that's why I go by Queen Mari, or, you know, that's why I've always called myself that, or the Queen of Evil, because I attached to that villain when I was younger.
That dragon is the coolest thing in any Disney movie ever.
It is. And that's pretty much the dragon sealed the deal for me. And that's like one of my first totems. But I also tend to like villains that, like, okay, I understand why she harmed people, is because she's so consumed with hate and anger that she'll just spill it out on other people. So I feel like Sleeping Beauty and that story itself is a warning. Like, just because someone's weird and you don't like them and they cause trouble doesn't mean that if you're inviting everyone in town to something, then you should probably invite them. Like, you shouldn't leave people out because you're not sure about them, you know, give everybody a chance. So I like that her story is kind of a warning. But then after that, like, I tended to like villains that they started out flawed, and then they have their own anti-hero journey and then become redeemed at the end of the story.
Kylo Ren.
And then there's another interesting, like, Walter White is another favorite of mine, but he starts out good and then becomes evil. So I like the ones that are kind of in the middle, or ones that are either more powerful or on another level than the hero. Whereas they're either like a multidimensional being, or something that has way more magical power than you, or somebody that can see the world through a different lens than you. Like, a good example of that would be like the Alien movies. Like, why are we so afraid of alien species trying to kill and eat us? I mean, all that is natural competition. It's not like the alien animal is evil. It's just trying to eat something and make babies. That's the kind of stuff that I really am into with villains, is like, okay, at what point is a villain not really evil? It is just enacting a natural urge. And why are we labeling that evil?
Okay, Dingus, that brings us to your bad guy, the ruthless bad guy, because they engage with honest, sincere aspect of themselves. They don't have an inhibition, and they just go for it.
I wouldn't say that's always true. Like, there are many types of ruthless bad guy, you know? There's just like a fucking, like, berserker mode rampage kind of villain, you know?
Yeah.
But there's also the callous enforcer that you would see in some kinds of like a POW film or something like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's Palpatine, who's ruthless, but he's slow. He takes his time. He's calculating.
I love Palpatine. Who doesn't?
Yeah. Yeah. He's like fucking dope. Do it. And I think kill him now.
Well, the one thing I do like about ruthless villains, it reminds me of the Adrian guy from Watchmen. What was his name? Ozymandias. Yeah, because his vision was noble, but he was taking it way too far, and to wipe out the entire Earth with a nuclear bomb just to start over and make a utopia. I think that's a little off the deep end, but I can understand why he made out that set of rules and why he is sticking to his guns. Does that make sense?
Well, so
I like him because favorite. I understand his train of thought.
Well, yeah, it's like he's Ozymandias, like, the entire thing about him is that he's a narcissist. He's doing this to prove something for himself.
He wants to be the savior. Really, he wants to save everyone and everybody love him because he's the best, you know?
Anyways, what I was getting at with like liking ruthless villains and enjoying them is that I think that's an expression of my personal psychological shadow. For the most part, I try to be very accommodating towards people. And the most hell that I've ever raised is when I get angry enough to become callous.
Yeah.
And that's what I become when I'm in that state.
I get that way too, where I'm dismissive or I just don't give a fuck.
I get destructive at some
point. I can get that way, but I'm pretty good at holding it back. But I get what you mean. Like, anybody can get to that point. And that's the scariest part about a ruthless villain, is anyone can be pushed to that point.
I also feel like they're just at that point all the time. And in some cases, the more compelling ones, in my opinion, adapt to it and learn to plan around it and use it in intervals. But they always stay in this mindset
of competitiveness, and it never ends.
Like, I think that reminds me of that guy from The Fifth Element.
I like bad guys that reflect my shadow. There's a piece of myself that can snap and just go full crazy, right?
Yeah.
And usually it manifests as yelling, but metaphorically and in the tarot, those are daggers, your words, your intellect. Like, what, in Skyrim, the dragons, when they're doing their fumes at each other, they're technically arguing. This is represented symbolically by those bad guys that just, like, flip and they go nuts, like Bateman. I mean, or
Maleficent, she turns into a freaking dragon, and that's why she's my role model, because she helps me express that side of myself that needs to get out. It's like that snapping and like blowing fire.
I'm not gonna hurt you.
Because you're so freaking done with these people.
You didn't let me finish my sentence. I said, I'm not going to hurt you. I'm just going to bash your fucking brains in.
What is that?
The Shining.
Oh, shit. I need to see it.
Jack was such a good villain.
All work and no play makes no boy. All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy.
Oh.
I'm being presented with this list of the greatest villains of all time. According to the internet, big place. I didn't know they could get all the opinions. We have the T-1000. We got good old Papa Palpatine. We got the alien. We've got Kylo Ren. We've got Agent Smith.
Yeah.
Got Wile E. Coyote. We've got Scar. Tony Montana. The Terminator. Alex DeLarge. Michael Corleone. Is that it?
Corleone. Okay. Corleone.
I'm not going to say Carleone,
Hal
9000, Jack Torrance, Anton Chigurh, Norman Bates, the Wicked Witch of the West, Hannibal Lecter, and Darth Vader. Vader was just a more jaded Kylo Ren.
The Wicked Witch is mixed, though, because she like comes from this fucked up upbringing.
She done got fucked over, but I think that's in the new musical, and is it really from the old books, the Oz books?
Yeah.
Wicked,
yeah, she really doesn't like Oz. And
no, Wicked is the musical.
It's a book.
Well, but I'm saying the Oz books were written in the 1800s.
Yeah,
let me.
But which both. Wizard of Oz book talked about her history? Because I wasn't aware of that one.
In Wicked, or what is it? Yeah, Wicked. No,
it's Wicked. It's a book and it's a musical.
That's right. Newly written, though.
I am honestly shocked that
really?
It's much lore to it's fucking. Wizard of Oz.
There's a ton of lore in Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, but Wicked is a new... Just like, okay, like how I like Maleficent. The new Maleficent movie with Angelina Jolie is completely rewritten, and it makes her even more empathetic. Like, you're more empathetic. Like, there's a reason that she's a bitch in that movie. Whereas in the original, she's just always been a bitch. And I really feel like she's a personification how grief and evil can consume a person and make them just a force of evil. No, Wicked is written new, and it's to make you empathize with the villain of the original series, which honestly, she's not the only villain of the Oz series.
Yeah, it's Oz, really. He's a wizard.
She's just got the most sex appeal. If only we could get her a nose job.
Oh, God. She should stand up straight, too.
Yeah, she should.
Some hunchback listening, you're like, fuck you, dude.
Yeah, it was written in 1995, and it's based on the Wizard of Oz books.
I see that.
So what about bad guys that aren't necessarily an expression of the shadow, though? Like, comedic bad guys. You know, like I was really thinking about doing Plankton for this episode. I find Plankton so likable just because he's so cynical.
For those kind of bad guys, I mean, Plankton's great, but gets foiled every single time. Like, he tries to make a plan, but it just doesn't work out. I like villains that are completely random and just do random things and get in the way of the hero. So I like chaotic, neutral villains a lot.
That's Plankton.
He's chaotic.
He once grabbed like a
He's order evil.
No, man. I don't see where order falls into this. He grabs a wad of his, like, I guess they're not inbred, but inbred plankton cousins, and turns them into like a human hand and ear so he can open up a safe.
Yeah, but
that's chaotic as fuck, man.
But he's just trying to get the formula, dude. He's trying to get the formula, though. Like, he has a plan. He has an ambition.
He might be neutral then, evil.
Yeah, yeah. Because sometimes he doesn't go to the Krusty Krab. Sometimes he just messes around at home. I also like his robot wife. Is like hilarious. Programmed her to nag him, which is why.
Holographic meatloaf. My favorite.
Yeah, but she also chides him all the time and scolds him. But like, who made her? He made Karen, so that's why he programmed her to tell him what a piece of crap he is. It's like, wow, dude.
You know what else I love about Karen? She has like an inexplicable Northern Midwest accent.
Don't you know?
Don't you know?
Like, she's incredibly annoying in all aspects, but why did Plankton make her that way? It's because he has some kind of self-hate going on, and I think that's why he fails all the time.
This wasn't supposed to get so, like, be an in-depth fucking psychoanalysis of a SpongeBob character, but I'll take it.
I mean, that's what I gathered from it.
I'll take it.
Because I think he's perfectly capable to do whatever he wants, but I think he likes the game.
I have a question about Plankton in an attempt to get us a little bit back on our train of thought here. Does Bikini Bottom need Plankton to progress? Is he a force of progress at all?
No,
he's a loser. Nobody goes to his restaurant. He burns the place down a couple of times.
Does that create jobs? Does that make for new security positions in Bikini Bay?
No, he automates all the positions.
Yeah, yeah, they're all robots.
Now we're driving.
He's big man.
Now we're driving. Yeah,
You're pretty evil. You're evil for that one.
Luke, I think the show's over.
All right, so we're getting around to the idea that if we didn't have bad guys, we wouldn't progress at all. What does that mean? That means we need bad guys. Anton LaVey says, if evil were by chance eradicated, the race would die of inertia, at least under existing standards of mental and emotional development. Volumes have been charted, the history of man's cruelty and tyranny. How many have considered the essential role of villainy in human development? An impartial survey would no doubt qualify the villain as an unsung hero. Consider these still fresh examples. If Aleister Crowley had not been the, quote, wickedest man in the world, the like of Gerald Gardner and Margaret Murray would not have stepped on stage for purposes of enlightenment, and Dennis Wheatley might be a starving hack. They owe their identities to Crowley's outrages. If the Hell's Angels had not caused such a furor, and had not been ritualized in motion pictures like The Wild One and Scorpio Rising, a, quote, clean, wholesome interest in motorcycling and its billions in profits would not have evolved. The glamour of evil, not fun in the sun, secretly spawned the present bike movement. Pollution reduction, economical transportation, all other rationales for motorcycling are piety devices.
Beautiful.
Glamour of evil.
And that's now, from Anton LaVey, The Devil's Notebook.
Now, I knew a LaVeyan Satanist who gave me a more modern example of this. He said, before Marilyn Manson, if you had facial piercings or visible tattoos, you couldn't get a job at Subway. After Marilyn Manson, you could.
Yeah, and I love how this, the yin to the yang, it's like a driving force. So you always have to have, evil will always be present. And this becomes a dilemma, especially in some stories for heroes, because then you have the option of becoming a nihilist. Like, you could abandon your hero's journey, because what's the use if there's always going to be evil? But if you look at it in a different way, in that, like, evil provides an opportunity to spur you on and give you motivation to achieve something and to win something that's good. So it doesn't mean that you should just give up, but look at evil as more of it is a progressive force, because it creates change. It creates a change in contrast, and then it draws people into the future, because you have to make plans on how to stifle that.
It's interesting, too, because you can see this replicated in other areas of nature. Like, with no death, there'd be no natural selection. Natural selection isn't a function of things that are already living. It's a function of what's gone.
Yes. And if you didn't have death and decay and bacteria and infection and mold and disgusting fungus and rats and disease, then we would be We would be suffocating under a pile of refuse and matter that can't deteriorate. So villainy and evil brings an important thing to the table, because if it does get to consume things, it actually breaks down society and allows a new society to arise out of it, as if like a phoenix or something.
Okay, Mari, but let me ask you a question. So if the bodies aren't decomposing, then would it be considered socially acceptable to stuff a pillow with rat carcasses?
Sure.
I mean, there wouldn't even be any rigor mortis. It would be quite supple, really.
It's kind of like living in VR. Like, have you ever like played a game and you spawn too many objects and then your computer crashed? It's like you have to have a mechanism to kind of clear out the stuff that you're not using anymore, or else a life will cease to exist.
Now you're talking like a bad guy.
I'd really like to see a real life entity cram, like two objects just in the same place twitching.
Actually, hey, that's been done, and it's weird.
But what?
Yeah, they've done quantum experiments where they've actually had a solid piece of like macro matter, like that you could hold in your hand, appearing in two places at the same time.
Holy shit.
Yeah, but it's really hard to do.
Nuts.
Probably for weapons technology, which brings us, of course, to
Jean-Baptiste Emmanuel Zorg.
Yes!
From The Fifth Element. He really encompasses that whole idea that evil is just a part of nature and we really need it, and he will be the herald of all that action. He's somehow in the movie come into contact with this thing that they call the ultimate evil, and it's going to bring like total eradication of life to Earth, and he's just totally down with it. And he's got a really cool dialogue with one of the more like good characters in the movie.
He's a priest.
Yeah, he's in fact talking to a priest who, I guess they acknowledge that aliens are somewhat like a savior to humanity. And he's looking for the four chaos emeralds. I mean, elemental stones.
Where's that? Damn, I can't do that twice.
Zorg is such a better bad guy than Thanos. Oh my fucking God, dude.
Who isn't?
Yeah, I know.
But I wish it were Plankton.
We understand Thanos, but he's just like, come on, man. Like,
Plankton is a more real nihilist.
Yeah.
Well, this actually also brings us to Zorg, because there's a difference between big evil and little evil. And Zorg explains the value of the big evil in his back and forth with Priest Vito Cornelius. Who wants to read which one?
Wait. I want to be Vito Cornelius.
Who wants to be Zorg?
Read about... hold on. I'll be a priest.
Now, he already got the priest.
Pardon the priest.
I can't be evil voice. Somebody else.
Okay, I'll be evil voice.
You got to be a little southerner with it, though.
Yeah, he
where are the
I can do it.
Yeah, do Zorg. Just speak with a little southern. Just a little bit. Like you're sophisticated and maybe a tobacco billionaire.
Like candy, like fucking that guy at the plantation from
a Southern Dandy.
Yes,
a Southern Dandy.
I don't know what I'm talking about. Yeah, go ahead.
John Candy.
What?
Whatever.
No.
Hot out here. I do declare.
Oh Lord, I think I'm getting a case of the vapors.
There you go.
That's a little heavy, but yeah, let's go for it. So you're Zorg, and Dingus is Priest Vito Cornelius.
Take a line, Bart.
Thank you.
No, it's you. Zorg is first.
Say what?
Is it me?
Yeah, you're Zorg.
Oh, I'm Zorg?
For a moment.
Sweet. I thought Dingus was. Okay.
Where are all the stones?
I don't know. And even if I did know, I wouldn't tell someone like you.
Why? What's wrong with me?
You try to serve life, and you seem to want to destroy it.
Oh, Father, he's so wrong. Let me explain. So, who's doing the actions?
He puts a glass on the table to set up the little experiment that's about to happen.
Guys, it's my guest.
And he slowly pushes it off the desk.
Life, which you so nobly serve, comes from destruction, disorder, and chaos. Now take this empty glass. Here it is. Peaceful, serene, boring. But if it's destroyed... And he pushes the glass off the table.
Boom.
All these robots come out to clean it up.
Yeah, a bunch of robots come with like spray and a broom attachment, and they all beep and bop and do their job. It's like,
so like a bunch of stupid Roombas.
Yeah.
Look at all these little things. So busy now. Notice how each one is useful. A lovely ballet ensues, so full of form and color. Now think about all those people that created them. Technicians, engineers, hundreds of people. Who would be able to feed their children tonight so those children could grow up big and strong and have little teeny children of their own, and so on and so forth. Thus, adding to the great chain of life. You see, Father, by causing a little destruction, I am in fact encouraging life. In reality, you and I are in the same business.
Zorg starts to choke on a cherry. And the priest goes on a monologue and says, "Where's a robot that saves you from choking?" before saving Zorg from death. Is it a good guy move to save the bad guy?
I don't think so.
Like God and the problem of evil.
Like Batman mm-hmm. and Joker.
And yeah. Batman is constantly saving Joker.
Yeah.
So yet again, are we ready for the quote? Yeah. Sorry to ruin everyone's fun. So yet again, we come back to Anton LaVey in The Devil's Notebook. He says, "The more grandiose the villain, the more beneficent he is to society. The small-time villain affects only the microcosm in which he operates, unless his act of villainy is considered so heinous that it spreads beyond his normal sphere of influence. When a villain attains universality, he is endowed with the mantle of devildom. However, if a real villain does not come forward to serve as a convenient embodiment of evil, thereby saving the good guy's cause, such a person must be developed and sometimes invented. If evil were by chance eradicated, the race would die of inertia, at least under existing standards of mental and emotional development."
And can I insert, this is a great point of why, like when we're talking about like Alien, the movies, why alien species or other species or things that we don't understand are often used as villains. Because in a world where everyone agrees and we're all friends, what's the next biggest villain is something that's outside of our species or understanding.
The old man versus nature trope.
Mm-hmm. So know? If you don't have a man to be afraid of, then you must be afraid of nature because nature will consume you.
Well, if you notice, it seems like the further away we get from dying of like the shit that people used to die of all the time, like tuberculosis and, tetanus and just
dysentery.
Being alive before 1952, yeah. You know,
there's new things that are killing us now. And honestly, yeah. Like we've invented little robots that we look at all day and it's killing our brains. Like, you know, they found out that cell phones actually just, they're like a casino in your pocket.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like we're inventing things to help us, but it's almost like we're our own villain as a
suicide
species.
Rates are going up, up, up.
However, the more problems we create, the more drive and motivation we have to create more solutions. So in a way, that's pretty much how our species functions. And that's why the hero and the villain, it's inherent in our DNA to have
it's
these.
Like getting used to, if you get used to your circumstances, you're going to find new things to kill you.
Right. Oh, or yeah. People will turn on each other. And that's, to me, that's what a villain is we've conquered nature and now humans are turning on each other. And it's hard to find, you have to figure out who's the predator, but everybody looks like a person. And how, like we were talking about Patrick Bateman, how he has that mask and that facade and he works and with all his coworkers and he blends right in, but he's so boring and empty inside. Those are the new predators that we have to watch out for. And now we even have organizations of these people where hundreds of these people get together and they try. So it's just extrapolating more and more and more. Like you can never stamp out evil, but it doesn't mean you should stop fighting it because that's the whole point of being alive.
I felt a little paladin twinge in my heart when you said that. Paladin?
I mean, I know, but like I realized a long time ago, I could have become a nihilist and maybe I was for 5 seconds. But when you realize like being good and being kind to people and trying to help people, it's probably not in your own best interest, you know? And you can never get rid of all of the things around you that cause harm to people. Like not even by yourself, not even a group of people could we get rid of that. Because there will always be something that springs up. But I can't, like I decided I would never let that stop me from trying to do good. And that's you have to come to terms with, it's not that you're not helping, it's just that you're helping move the engine forward.
I find that interesting because by the time that I had turned 16, I was definitely a nihilist. And I was for many years, and I still kind of struggle to climb out of that mindset. But the way that I responded to it was indulging my own selfishness.
Yeah. And I had to learn how to do that for myself to be healthy, because otherwise I would lash out a lot. But it was because I didn't have an outlet for the negative feelings, but I also am incapable of, like, I have a hard time. I can hurt other people, but it's usually, it's like, you know, when you get a confused Pokemon and it hurts itself out of frustration, it's basically like that. It's like I flail around in my own emotions and I hurt people, but it's not like I intend to. But having a villain to relate to and to identify with is such a great outlet to get that rage out of you so that you don't have a panic attack or breakdown or accidentally hurt someone that you care about and that you actually know how to get it out of yourself. I love watching, there's a few Joker movies that I just love watching and he creeps me out and he's scary, dude. But just seeing him do that and go crazy on someone helps me not do it to real people, you know? Or playing GTA and just being able to punch someone in the face, you know?
Like playing video games. It's therapy for, you know, violence out.
Yeah, and GTA, you can be a villain too. Like, you're allowed, it's a sandbox, so you can, like, be mean if you want. But, like, I don't like the games where you're like, oh, you're the hero and you have to do the good thing. That's why I like games where you can choose, oh, I could probably do this bad thing and get away with it. We were just talking about Silent Hill, and it affects exact, like, what you do affects your ending. And that was a turning point in video games where you could get punished if you acted like a villain in a game, which I thought was kind of cool.
You know, there's another game like that I think is really cool. We've talked about it a couple of times on the show, and I'm not going to spoil it, but I will tell you just a little bit about the ending. He goes, I am Shadow the Hedgehog, the ultimate life form designed by the Black Arms alien race, sent to punish this planet. This is who I am.
God.
Wait, I'll do that again.
This is who I am.
There you go. That's just cool.
He's a bad guy. Yeah, he's not like a super like edgy good guy.
I think he's an anti-hero.
And Shadow, I don't even know what he is anymore. He just kind of shows up just to be in the game every once in a while. But the whole idea of that particular game was that you got to choose whether he was a villain or not. But in the canon, he's a good guy.
Yeah, but he's edgy. Like, it's like Vegeta, which I almost didn't put him on my list, but I'm like, he actually starts out as like a villain that like wants to kill the entire Earth. So But he's been a good guy now more like longer than he's been in the series.
Ugh, like, you big smelly willy.
Yeah, but you know, I liked him because he was doing evil out of a panic and a self-preservation thing. And then he realized, oh, well, I can actually self-preserve by being friendly to these other people.
I can't forgive him for destroying the bug planet.
Somebody destroyed his planet, so do you blame him? And he was also almost going to be the king of it.
Yeah, that was
like, I don't know.
I'm not going to be king of anything. Fuck you. You spoiled.
But like Shadow was created to be a villain, but
yeah,
I
but
also
if you
think
were, you'd be Shadow, pissed off if you missed the opportunity.
Totally.
Yeah.
But if Shadow was created to be evil, it's like, don't you think that they gave him a story like his own storyline in the games, because I really think that they went into him a little bit deeper than
he could have been really cool.
Because Eggman never got his own game. So what's up with that? You know, like Shadow is definitely Sonic's Shadow. Like literally that's his name.
Yeah, Shadow.
So how are you going to argue with that? Shadow is like evil, edgy Sonic. Whereas Sonic has bad qualities too, but I don't think Shadow is perfectly evil. I think he just provides a foil. And that's what I was saying at the very beginning, is that a lot of times villains are twins of the hero, and they're to be a reflection of the hero, so the hero knows which direction to go in.
I want to bring up something that I talked with Dingus about, and it has to do with the level of moronic lack of awareness that Star Wars fans have, especially about Luke Skywalker, and about half of the metric ton of hate that gets rendered at Rian Johnson has to do with this exact thing, that Rian Johnson accurately understood that most Star Wars fans patently can't deal with because I don't know. They're in denial. Now,
what's wrong with Luke?
What is wrong with Luke? If you go to the end of Return of the Jedi, when he supposedly wins the day, defeats the bad guy and saves everyone, right? When he defeats Darth Vader, he does so using a dark side point. Right before that scene, he withdraws his lightsaber and says, I'm not going to kill you, father, citing his attachment to his family for his reason to not fight. Vader is intelligent and a trained initiate of the dark side. And he says, well, you're stupid to withdraw your weapon. He knows Luke's going to pull it out again if he attacks, and he does. So they get into a fight again. Luke is like not doing well in this fight, and he's hiding. And Vader is now creeping about looking for him. He says, ah, your thoughts betray you, sister. You have a sister. And this works exactly how Sidious would want it to, because Luke, who's attached to his family and his friends, immediately loses all cognitive ability. He loses his focus. He draws his lightsaber and he attacks Darth Vader with pure rage. And if you don't agree with me that this is a tragic scene, then you also disagree with John Williams, because the music is sad and remorseful. And when he defeats Darth Vader, he has this look of pure rage on his face and hatred.
I want to say, though, I also think that Vader let him do it.
Maybe so.
I think it's a good thing that he did.
I think he wanted that to happen. And that's because if you're in the Sith, that's how you ascend. And he wants the best for his offspring.
Yep.
Yeah,
so in a way, I think Vader stepped back and allowed himself to be slayed. So he did have to froth up his own son to get at that rage. He was trying to extract the rage out of Luke. And once he saw that, he was okay with going.
Something tells me Vader.
Yes. Sorry. I'm just so agreeing with Mari right now. And I have to say,
he knows he's leaving his legacy to someone who's worthy of it. And that's the whole point of the Sith, is that you have to prove that you are stronger than the person that you take the throne from.
Yes.
Whereas the Jedi almost are like goody two shoes. And I could definitely see how the Empire arose because, you know, fuck these goody two shoes. We need to be tough right now.
Okay. So you fast forward to episode 8, right? Where everyone hates and is in denial. And like Luke Skywalker would never do this. Luke Skywalker, who's now the head of the Jedi Order, presumably. He doesn't even have anyone over him to tell him what to do. He's just doing it, right? It's like he hasn't even been trained as a kid. He's just doing his own thing. He has his own little like outer heaven dealio, and it's great for a while, but then comes along Ben Solo, who is so immeasurably powerful that he, you know, got to pay attention to this kid. We all know that he's going to be important. Well, he goes into Ben Solo's tent and he reads his mind in secret. And what does he see? He sees so much darkness. He immediately goes straight to the idea that it's going to destroy his friends and his family. And before he has a chance to think about it rationally, that same thing that he pulled out to defeat Darth Vader activates without him consciously doing it. And he says in that scene, villain. It passed like a fleeting shadow, he says. And I was left with like, what is he say, you know? And then that's when Ben Solo was like, oh, my God, yeah, Luke Skywalker is going to kill me right now. And he's a hypocrite. And it makes him worse. It cements his decision, basically.
He could have left the guy alone. And this is why privacy is extremely important. Because even though you have bad thoughts, saying.
No, you're right.
But the guy was young. I mean, do you remember when you were a teenager? How much did you think about murdering everyone you saw? A lot.
More than I'd like to admit on a podcast.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying is like he overlooked that and he allowed his limbic system to activate without understanding, oh, this is a teenager. He's still figuring it out. I need to be more attentive and be a better guide to him and give him more moral support so that he doesn't fall into this trap of thinking. So instead of doing that, he's just like, oh no, it's the enemy. I'm going to stab the enemy.
He didn't think that consciously, though. He didn't integrate that part of his shadow. It just came out.
Well, that's what I'm saying is that he doesn't know how to control it because he doesn't understand like, oh shit, I went through my own shadow. Like I have a shadow. Like other people deal with their shadows differently than you. And you have to understand that just because someone's thinking about something bad or they are musing on it or they like to play violent video games or something, that doesn't mean that they're a bad person. Right,
and to be fair, Yoda and Obi-Wan were like, he is not ready. They gave him a lot of leeway. They saw inside his mind and they saw nothing but imbalance, but they let him choose. And that's where Luke Skywalker
they
want to
teach
wrong.
Him still, but they didn't want to abandon him or hurt him or disburn him because of the thought he had. They wanted to work through it with him. That's what a good mentor, or a father figure, a patriarch would do.
So there, Star Wars fans, Luke Skywalker's not perfect.
No, he's not.
Honestly.
And he's the son of Darth Vader. What do you expect, you guys? And the whole point of Star Wars to me is to prove that whether you're on the good, the light side or the dark side, it's bullshit, guys. It's about your personal autonomy and how you protect people around you. Are you taking your own? Are you thinking about yourself or are you thinking about other people?
Well, Darth Vader gets led to the dark side by thinking about other people, and so does Luke Skywalker. That's part of the mystery of Star Wars and about life itself.
But the way of the Sith is much like reptilian thinking, as if survival of the fittest, and you don't defend people who are weaker than you.
Honestly, I always found Luke to be an uninteresting character, and the fact that, like what Rabbit just explained, makes him way more interesting to me now. Because there's no point in being good if you aren't a little bad.
You have to have a struggle because there's no point. If you're ultimately goody two shoes, everybody hates that trope. Everybody hates that person that's just good and they're always good and everybody loves them. Nobody likes that person.
It's just like you're being fake at that point.
Yeah. Just as fake as the villain with the facade on. Just as fake.
It's like a priest touching children.
Yes.
And you know, even if you aren't being fake, people might not believe you anyway. So, and this brings us to Clockwork Orange, where after he goes through the Ludovico treatment, he comes home and there's somebody else who's now renting his room from his parents, and he has nowhere to stay. And the guy who's renting the room is just going over his past and being like, dude, this is just what he does. He's a liar. He'll say anything to get what he wants. And Alex actually feels bad at this point. He says, I know how things are now. I've suffered, and everybody wants me to go on suffering. To which I think I might have deleted the reply, but he says, anyway, the guy who's renting the room says, well, it's only proper that you should continue suffering because you made so many other people suffer. And
yeah, like the mother and the father, he explicitly tells Alex that he treated his parents like shit, so he deserves the room over over Alex.
But what's funny is he had the room when he was being his evil self, and now that he's come back and he's like authentically feels bad, he can't catch a break.
He's like fixed, quote unquote.
This happens in society today too. Like, it's even politically relevant because on the left there's this problem of people who used to be of people rejecting those who used to be conservative.
Yep. I've gone full circle too because of the madness. It's just insane. They're attacking their own at this point because they have that rage thing going off. This
endless virtue signal. People trying goody goody.
And no one's perfect, but they're not willing to acknowledge that. They're like, we can all work to be better. It's like, yes, that's what we've all been doing that the whole time. You're the only one that thinks we haven't.
I didn't want to get into this on the free show because we don't like to talk about politics, but in terms of bad guys, I consider myself patriotic, but part of my patriotism is being able to take my country and its history and personify it as a bad guy, as evil, to look at it honestly and hopefully grow up from it.
But we are allowed to do that, unlike other countries. We are allowed to look at our government as a demon and grow from that and understand what parts are bad and what parts are okay.
And even when the system doesn't work and doesn't allow that to be true, we still intend for it to be true. Deep down, we are a collection of different cultures from different places that are looking for something greater than what we were given. We're looking for something like we're cosmic explorers, man. I don't want to be too.
Well, I know. But the other thing is, I think that a lot of these villain stories are a warning to regular people to be careful, not even to be careful or walk on eggshells around someone because they're going to attack you, but to be respectful and to have boundaries to other people. But, you know, if you say it like how with Maleficent, if you have a party and you invite everyone on the block, then you better invite everyone on the block, dude.
And
right.
Maybe don't kill the people that lived on the block first and then say.
Or if somebody is a drama queen, then just let them be there and kind of ignore them. But the point is to not go after someone or persecute somebody because they're different than you. Because this is the hero villain thing. And in all honesty, this is the reason I like the middle of the road kind of chaotic villains or people that do it because they don't know any better is because that's more realistic. We don't really have people that you meet every day that are villains because they're pure evil, right? People that you perceive as villains in your everyday life are people that you just misunderstand. And I think that's
to me is what the hero and the villain story is that they are actually, they could have been the same person, you guys, right?
Well,
they
could have
gone down the same path and come up to the same conclusions, but for some reason the hero doesn't, and then the villain relents to that destructive quality.
Does that come down to like their nature, or is it just like random or something?
I think that some people are predisposed to that, but nurture has to do with it, because if someone that has those tendencies is not nurtured properly, they will fall into the tendencies and become a monster.
And you know who disagrees with you?
Who?
Hannibal Lecter. And if you'd like to hear him disagree with Mari Sama, who's been dropping hot, wicked knowledge bombs on this. I like how we got you caffeinated. Yes,
that was, and my fava beans.
This worked.
We're going to talk about Hannibal Lecter next, and some of the more ominous villains, I'm assuming.
And if you'd like to hear that, please go to www.patreon.com/thewholerabbit, where $5 gets you access to every single extended episode. I'll send you 2 bonus stickers, and you'll get access to our Discord server, which is way cooler than the last time you heard of it. And it's way cooler than the time before that and the time before that. And
it's always cooler.
Yeah, it's like Dogecoin if it never dropped in price. It just keeps going up.
It's like an inside joke that keeps building on itself.
It's Dogecoin.
Whatever. Thank you, everybody.
Can I say the thing?
Yeah.
Dogecoin.
Eat carrots and shoot lasers.
Hot.